There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Yeah, you're listening to The Grill. We're with you through till 6 o'clock this afternoon. As always, if you'd like to share your thoughts, do so now. Text us on 4001, asking you for your suggestions of sporting greats who've gone on to enjoy successful alternative careers in something other than sport after they've hung up their boots, their rackets, their sports kit accordingly. Why? Because Imran Khan this week was announced as the Prime Minister of Pakistan. As always, if you'd like to comment on any of the thoughts you're hearing here from the Grill panellists, you can do so at DubaiEye1038FM, hashtag DubaiEye1038, at DubaiEyeSports. You can text us on 4001, or why not give us a call at any point you wish by texting us whenever you want on 4001. You're listening to The Grill, with you through until 6 o'clock this evening. Not from Barasti this afternoon, but we will be back there next weekend at the same time, but plenty more to look forward to.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport now and get your thoughts into us. Let's do a quick one round the grounds. We have had all the latest from the Rugby Championship. Quick reminder of what happened in Sydney just a few moments ago.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you, the All Blacks are off to winning ways once again, beating Australia 38 points to 13. Tries by Aaron Smith, Jack Goodhue, Baden Barrett, Brody Retallick, and of course a double by Wasaki Naholo. So All Blacks 38, Australia 13.
Let's go down to Trent Bridge, where there has been a wicket. Next, the third wicket has fallen for India. Chiteshwar Pujara will be throwing his bat through whatever can be thrown through when he gets back into the change room. India's number three has gifted that man, Chris Wokes, his third wicket, and England their third wicket. Two deliveries before lunch. Wokes sending down a rare short ball, and Pujara pulling straight down Adil Rashid's throat, a deep fine leg. Pujara can't believe what he's done. Stands there a bit. Kohli at the other end. Let's just say he's not looking best pleased, as is always the want of Virat Kohli, as he sees the rest of the Indian batting lineup fall around him. So early lunch that's going to be interesting time, interesting chat as well. It's lunch down at Trent Bridge, and as it stands, India are 82 through the loss of three wickets. Let's get the latest from the football game in Scotland, game down in Wales as well. Sean's watching both of them for us.
Yeah, we'll start down in Cardiff. Still 0-0 with Cardiff and Newcastle. It's been a end-to-end stop-start kind of game, really. It's some very, very tasty tackles going in. We just had a little incident there off the ball where Kennedy, the Newcastle player, just kicked out on one of the Cardiff players. And I just wonder if VAR was in play, he probably would get sent off for that.
Wow, okay, yeah.
It was similar to the, I forget the Rangers player's name now, when they played the first game against Aberdeen a couple of weeks ago. Striker off the ball,
yeah,
kicked the centre-half, and the linesman's seen it and they've gone back and given him a red card. And that was a similar incident there. So it'd be interesting to see if something happens after that game, if they retrospect.
Surely only a matter of time, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think the World Cup was a good test for VAR. It was highly talked about because it was new, and there wasn't a lot of clarity around it for people who were watching it. But I think, like rugby, you know, rugby have done very, very well with VAR, and I think it'll come into the Premier League probably next season.
Keep an eye on those games for you, as of course we will be for all of the games that have been played this afternoon. What have we got for you today? Well, at 6 o'clock you've got no fewer than four games kicking off. Everton taking on Southampton, Leicester against Wolverhampton Wanderers, West Ham United, who are rock bottom of the table, it's easy for a Hammer fan to say that one, they're taking on Bournemouth at home at the London Stadium. Our feature game though will be Tottenham Hotspur against Fulham, the London Derby, yet another of the London Derbies. And talking of London Derbies, there's one to follow straight after that, 8:30 local time here, Chelsea against Arsenal. Let's stick with the football because there's plenty to look forward to, not just this afternoon. I think Chelsea-Arsenal, possibly the biggest game of the weekend, but some real good games to look forward to tomorrow. Sean O'Shea will be watching on with interest as his beloved Huddersfield Town take on Man City. Lunchtime kickoff tomorrow, same time as Burnley against Watford. Man City against Huddersfield Town. Man City, though, without one of their more influential players after the bad news midweek that a certain Kevin De Bruyne will be missing, not just for that game, but for the next 3 months. Pep Guardiola, obviously very unhappy about this, and has pointed his finger at who?
Like the doctor said, he will be out 2.5-3 months. Hopefully in that time he can do as best as possible, to when he's going back, you know, help us again. So will be a big miss. Like last season was with Benjamin Mendy. Last season, what happened last season, Kevin was outstanding, so in all terms. And of course, it's for him, his family, of course, the injury, and these long injuries you never wanted, but accept it, part of the game, and especially part of the amount of games and seasons and games and seasons that at the end the players fell down, so that sometimes is normal. So they don't rest, they don't have, there was a tough season last season. They came back in the short recovery and we demand him in the first moment, come on, let's go, because we are in the competition. And of course the human beings have a limit, and sometimes it's kind of things happen.
Sean O'Shea, I take Pep Guardiola's point there, but surely a club of the size and the ilk and the scale of Manchester City, when you look at the bench they put out there last weekend, you look at the strength and depth they have in every single position, surely it's down to him and his team to work out whether players are ready to come back from what's been a long and arduous summer.
Well, it is, and that's the importance of, you know, sports science and, you know, the GPS data that clubs use. But there's still that human element to it. I think there's only so much you can do with sports science and in terms of letting players recover and rest. But everybody's unique in how they're made up. And I think he probably felt that he was fit and he was fresh and ready to play. But it's just one of those things that happen, and it's unfortunate.
And possibly he's one of those characters that wants to play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like he obviously loves playing, and he's such a big influence on the City team. And even though they do have, you know, great strength and depth at the club, they will miss him. You know, for him to not be available for probably all of the Champions League group games, you know, I think City will have a real push for the Champions League this year, and he's such an influential player. They'll really miss him. But like I said, they've got players who can come in, but I think he's
have
one of
their special
players.
Have they got like for him or not?
I don't think so. I think, you know, De Bruyne, if you look at how he played last year and the goals he scored and what he did in the big games, I think he's one of their more special players that's harder to replace than another player on the pitch. But we'll see. Look, but they won't have to change the style of play or anything like that. They will have players that will come in and play, but we'll see. But like I said, it's a big push for the Champions League this year, and it'll be a big miss for them.
Man City taking on Huddersfield Town tomorrow. 3 points for the town, isn't it, surely?
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it?
It's got to be, isn't it?
I mean, you know, last year we played City at home and we were 1-0 up, I think, until the 50-something minute. And we nearly sneaked a draw only to lose it in the last couple of minutes. And then our last three games of the season, we played Chelsea, Arsenal and Man City. And we got a draw. We got a draw at Chelsea and a draw at City. And that essentially kept us up. Early in the season, City played very well last week. You know, we didn't play particularly well against Chelsea, although Chelsea were very good. I would, if we can get a point tomorrow, I would be very, very happy. If we can keep the score respectable as well, and we lose, I'll be happy as well.
The not so nosy neighbours for Manchester City, that is, Manchester United, are also in action. They won't be in the same city at the same time. They will be well south, right down on the south coast, playing Brighton and Hove Albion. That one kicks off at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. Brighton entertaining Manchester United. Which way is this one going to go? CVR, you are a committed and admitted Man United fan. You've been through the ringer in the last couple of seasons. A lot of interest going into, not a huge amount of action in the transfer window and the market during the off-season. But you've come into a new season. You got the opportunity to see them last weekend. How did you rate them?
Not impressed at all. I think that United have got a long, long way to go. I think Mourinho needs to start focusing a little bit more on what he's looking to get out of this team. To me, United, the way they play is still way too slow. And if I compare their pace and intensity on the field compared to City, I think they're still way, way off the mark. He spent a lot of money. I mean, Sanchez has come in, easy playing him in the right role. I still don't believe he is. And I think Jose is going to have a tough time this year in the league, because I think if you look at City and you look at Liverpool at the moment, to me, those are two teams which they are kind of leading the way, and you kind of got to get to their pace and their intensity of playing. And to me, of what I've seen of United, they way, way off. And I tell you what, I don't think they're going to have an easy time on the South Coast come tomorrow afternoon. So I think Jose's got a lot of work to do. He needs to kind of get a couple of combinations going. Until he can get that right, I don't really see United challenging for the title.
Is he going to be there at the end of the season?
Time will tell. I think it will be very, very important to see where United are come Christmas time. But if you have to honestly ask me, I don't think so.
One question I want to ask you, Shawnee, about this one is because it seems to be the ongoing, you know, every single week when you open up your paper or you listen to your radio, there is something about Jose and Paul Pogba. It continued throughout the summer. They weren't even together. They were at different parts of the world, and yet it continued throughout the summer. Is this classic Jose? Is this classic Mourinho, where he looks to take the focus off other elements of the team and the tactics and the squad and bring the focus onto him? And probably him and Paul are best of mates, and they're just manufacturing this drama around them.
Do you know, I actually think that there is a problem with them. I think, you know, I think, you know, they say there's no smoke without fire. And I think, okay, they both played it down. But, you know, Pogba was interesting last week when, you know, they interviewed him after the game and he said, I can't say too much because I'll get into trouble. You know, you don't know if they're playing a game or not. But I think with the way things have gone and Jose Mourinho's demeanour and kind of his attitude towards things, I think that the United players are very bored in the way that they play. They go out and play games. They've got such an array of talent in that squad, but the way that they're restricted because they play this very slow, boring style of play. And, you know, and like you're saying, as a Man United fan, it's terrible to watch. United will always do okay with Mourinho there because he knows how to grind out results. But it's just not pleasing on the eye at all. And it must be very, very dull to be a Man United fan at the minute because it's not entertaining at all.
I think the big thing with Jose too is he's not the belle of the ball anymore. You know, when he first came into the Premier League, he was the special one and everybody hung on every word that he said. And, you know, he was the funny guy and journalists love interviewing. But I kind of think he's getting outplayed by his own game, by Guardiola and Klopp. And I think that nowadays he's not the centre of attention anymore. No. I think that's one of the things he seems to be struggling with too.
I think for me as well, I feel like he hasn't evolved as a coach.
Absolutely.
You know, like he came onto the scene at Chelsea and it was unbelievable. He played great football. He had Robin and Duff on the wing. You know, Drogba up front. They were really, really good to watch. And he branded himself the special one, but everyone believed it. And then he went to Inter Milan and played a very different style of football, but did well. You know, got to the Champions League final and whatnot. I don't think he was that successful at Real Madrid, and he just hasn't evolved with the game. And like you say, Guardiola and Klopp now are playing this really cool brand of football that everybody's excited to see. He just hasn't moved with it, but he could do it. He's obviously got it in his locker to do it, and Man United have got the players to do it, but he just wants to stick this very rigid, sort of boring style of play and just, you know, almost bore teams into results.
Let's get some more on that ongoing feud. Is it a feud or is it a friendship? Feud or friendship between Jose and Paul, Mourinho and Pogba. Are they best of mates? Are they flatmates? Or are they just flat out against each other? Is there something there? Sean O'Shea thinks there's no such thing as smoke without fire. There might be something bubbling under there. Or is it just very clever marketing and PR from Manchester United Inc.? Your thoughts would be appreciated on this one. It is a topic that is talked about ad infinitum around the world.
The truth is, we are together for two years and a couple of weeks, and I've never been so happy with him as I am now. That's the truth. I cannot demand more from him. I cannot ask more from him. He come here on a Monday. He trains 3 days. I asked for his support, for his contribution in an important match for us when the team had difficulties. He did it. He did it better and for more time than we could expect. When he says he did it for the fans and for the team, is exactly what I want. Is exactly what I demand from my players, is what he is giving me. He's working well, he's playing well, he does for the fans, he does for the team, and that's what I want. I want him to play for the team, which he's doing, and I repeat, I couldn't be happier than what I am.
So does that mean he remains your captain?
For the next match, yes.
What about the comments then last week after the game, Jose? Is that confusing then for those comments to come out?
I don't care. I want him to play well. I want him to play for the team. I want him to play for the fans. And that's what he did. And he's working extremely well here. But I have to say on his defense that... write what you want about him write what you want about me. Please don't say lies. Please don't put him in a situation where people can think that he's not a polite, educated guy, which he is. He's very polite, he's very educated. He never had a fight with me. We never had a warm or a hard, I don't know how you like to say, change of words. Everything is respected. I have no problems at all.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So what's happened in the world of sport in the last hour and a half or so? We can tell you that New Zealand have opened their campaign against Australia in the Rugby Championship, laying down a marker for all others to follow. They were victorious down in Sydney. It's half-time in the Scottish Cup and in the Premier League early kickoff, Cardiff against Newcastle. Sean O'Shea is watching both of those for us.
Yeah, half-time in Cardiff, so it's Cardiff City nil, Newcastle nil, no goals in the first half. It was, an even sort of first half, end-to-end. Like I said, a few tasty challenges going in, a bit physical, that you'd expect from a Neil Warnock's Cardiff side, and Newcastle replying the same. But yeah, interesting to see how the second half will go. And then up in Scotland, that's half-time, that's still 1-0 Celtic against Partick Thistle. Lee Griffiths with the goal.
They're in enjoying a bit of lunch down at Trent Bridge at the moment. England against India. Chris Wokes being the toast of the first session of the third test, as he's picked up three wickets. The top three of the Indian batting order, Dhawan, Rahul and Pujara. Pujara falling just two balls before lunch. So India are 82 for three. Virat Kohli is four not out, giving hope to all Indian cricket fans in that particular game at the moment. So keep an eye on that one for you on 4001. What's happening in the world of golf? Let's get the latest from the leaderboards with CVR.
Yeah, Tom, of course, last week was the conclusion of the PGA Championship that was won quite convincingly by Brooks Koepka. But the big talk was, of course, all about former world number one and 14-time major champion Tiger Woods and all the energy that he brings to the PGA Tour. Of course, all players now are really gearing down to the Ryder Cup, which of course starts in September, and everybody wanting to make that top eight. But what I can tell you is the golfers on the European Tour are in Sweden this weekend, of course, home of former British Open champion Henrik Stenson, and leading there in Gothenburg this week at South Africa's Thomas Aitken. He shot a fantastic 65 second round. He's currently at 12 under par. He's at 3 under for today. He's followed by Englishman Paul Warning, and then of course the Scott Jamieson at 9 under par in third position. Robert Rock caught a fantastic 65 today. He's at 6 under par in sixth position. And then, of course, over stateside, they're playing this week. It's the Wyndham Championship. And, of course, the big talk over there was Brandt Snedeker that shot that fantastic 59 opening round. Me and you were just speaking about that second shot on the par four that he put straight into the hole. He's leading that tournament at 14 under par. DA Point, South American, in second at 12 under par. He's followed there by CT Pan on 11 under par. And then the Canadian, David Hearn, he is sitting in fourth position at 9 under par. US Masters, former US Masters champion Sergio Garcia at 9 under par. He's sitting tied fourth position.
Interesting you mentioned there about the Ryder Cup. It's two words that you can't get away from at the moment. Every single golf tournament you talk about is precursored by build-up towards the Ryder Cup as players try and get into those top eight. So it's top eight that qualify, is that right, outright?
Top eight qualify, and then, of course, you've got the four captains' picks. So at this moment in time, or last week when I checked, Tiger Woods was not in that top eight. But, of course, he's getting very, very close. And will be interesting to see, of course, if he does get selected as a captain's pick.
Let's just work through who has qualified already. Three-time major championship Brooks Koepka, who we were just talking about there. World number one Dustin Johnson will both play for the US against Europe in September's Ryder Cup, which is going to be held in France for the very first time. Eight players have already qualified for the 12-man team, with captain Jim Furyk set to name four wildcard picks on September the 3rd, we think. Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed, Bubba Watson, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Webb Simpson make up the six, adding Koepka and Johnson. You've got a strong team already, haven't you?
Tom, in all honesty, and I've got a lot of flack for saying this, as much as the All Blacks are going to win the Rugby Championship, the States are going to win the Ryder Cup, I do not see Europe even coming close to that team. You've named the top eight, and then you've got the likes of Bryson DeChambeau, you've got Brooks Koepka, I think you've got Kevin Chappell, and
Tiger Woods as well.
Sorry?
Tiger Woods maybe as well.
Yeah, Tiger Woods and Matt Kuchar that you can still select from. So, oh my word, unbelievable team.
European golfers have three more events to play before their team is announced. The final one of those events is the Made in Denmark, which takes place at the end of this month into next. The European captain, Thomas Bjorn, will also make four wildcard picks to add to his eight automatic qualifiers on the 5th of September. At the moment, it is the Italian Francesco Molinari who won the Open, who currently leads the European standings. Ryder Cup takes place from the 28th to the 30th of September, so the end of September, at Le Golf National, which is near Paris. It's the first time that the tournament has gone to France. Much anticipation of that one. We're looking forward to it in many, many ways. And of course, Sports Night team will be all over it for you here on Dubai i103.8. So what does it take to get a Ryder Cup, and how do you prepare for it, given the fact that you've never done it before?
Back in May 2011, the bidding process to host the 2018 Ryder Cup reached its conclusion at the European Tour's headquarters. Germany, Spain, Portugal and Holland were all contenders, but it was the lure of Paris that won over the judging panel.
Boasting the oldest national open, stage every year outside the war years since 1906, and with outstanding commitment throughout the country, it goes to France.
It has been an amazing process, but it has been also a very long journey because we have started the process in 2008. At this time, the French Golf Federation wanted to bid to host the Ryder Cup because we thought that it was important to host such an event to help the development of the game. So the process has really started in 2008. The bidding process lasts during 3 years. And we won the bid the 17th of May 2011. And after that, to win a bid, you have to do many promises. And since 2011, I have now to deliver all the promises that we did to win the bid.
This will be the second Ryder Cup played in continental Europe. The first was in Spain in 1997. The charms of Paris have been pivotal in the build-up, and that will continue when both teams arrive in September.
It's great for France to host the Ryder Cup, but it's also great for the Ryder Cup brand to be played close to a main city like Paris. So it will not only be a French touch here on the course, but it will be the French touch around the organization of the Ryder Cup. For example, we will have this fan zone in the center of Paris. It's quite unique because the last venue, you couldn't imagine that the Ryder Cup was played, for example, in the center of Minneapolis. You had nothing in the center of Minneapolis. In Gleneagles, it was also difficult. In Edinburgh, you had not a fan zone as the one that we will create here in the center of Paris. Hosting the gala dinner at the Chateau de Versailles, you know, it's, I think, a special French touch. And what we did for the year to go when the two captains has played from the first floor of the Eiffel Tower, this is the kind of things which represents the French touch.
The recent Open de France on the Rolex series showed what a great venue Le Golf National is. Tickets for this Ryder Cup sold out within the first 2 hours of being on sale, with a record number of fans expected to attend.
I think that first, this course has been built in the past. It was a flat area. It was a piece of land for agriculture. And in 1990, when the French Golf Federation has decided to build a golf course, we had this idea of building these artificial buttes. And from these artificial buttes, you have a perfect view on the game. And I think that that's the reason why we will be able to host much more spectators than in the other venues. You have no trees, so it's not like, for example, in certain venues they had, unfortunately, to cut trees. Here, we don't have this problem. So from the buttes, the spectators will be in total comfort and will have a perfect view to follow the games and the players.
Keeping the fans happy is a huge part of staging the event, as are the environmental considerations.
We did many surveys. For example, we did an inventory of all the flowers and all animals before the Ryder Cup, and we will do it after the Ryder Cup. And we have guarantee that we will replace everything, and everything will be exactly like it was before the Ryder Cup. We did that work also concerning irrigation. We have now a new irrigation system, and this irrigation system will consume less water than in the past, and it will allow us to save water, which is very important today.
The French Golf Federation is determined to ensure this Ryder Cup adds to the event's heritage, made possible by the support of a key sponsor who understands the need for excellence.
First of all, Rolex is the partner, an historical partner of the French Golf Federation, historical partner of the Ryder Cup, and historical partner of the French Open. So we know each other since many years, and we know at the French Golf Federation the huge support that Rolex has brought to help us in all our different projects. And for example, when the French Golf Federation has decided to bid, the first partner in the Club des Partenaires was Rolex France, thanks to Mr. Schaeffer, who took this decision to support the French bid.
The hope is that France hosting this Ryder Cup will boost the popularity of golf in the country, with a view to increasing participation in the sport, particularly with young people.
Maybe we have other sports like football. And when you have a kid, he plays naturally football and he doesn't play naturally golf. And unfortunately, golf had still an elitist image, but really things are changing. We are the only federation in continental Europe to grow the number of kids at the French Golf Federation, and this since 2009. So I think that the Ryder Cup will help us to develop the game and to change also the image, this elitist image that unfortunately the golf still have.
European captain Thomas Bjorn has named his vice captains, and the final list of players will be confirmed in September. Hopes are high in France that one of their own homegrown golfers will be part of the 12-man team.
We know that we have very lot of expectations. For example, it will be the first time where a Ryder Cup in Europe will host so many Americans. Why? Because it's Paris. So we think that with all what we have put in place, the Ryder Cup will be a success. If we have a French, it will be a special flavor in extra. But if we don't have a French, it will be for sure. The Ryder Cup will allow us and help us to develop the game. If we have a French, it will be better. If not, unfortunately, we will develop the game and the golf will have this, the image will be totally different after the Ryder Cup.
Running from September the 28th to the 30th, this Ryder Cup is set to be a unique edition of golf's premier team event.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Keep text coming in on 4001 if you'd like to have your say, looking forward to the Ryder Cup. Or if you listen to Carlos van Rosenfeld, then don't bother. I mean, it's going to be a US whitewash, isn't it, surely?
Yeah, Tom, I think, you know, US, I think golf's in a very healthy position at the moment. There's so many contenders, but as we've said, a lot of those contenders are American at the moment. And the American players that are on the circuit, a fantastic bunch, very, very dominating. I mean, if you look at the majors alone, three of those titles are held by Americans. So I think it's going to be very, very tough for the Europeans on the day. But as you say, anything can happen. But I think the Americans definitely go in as a favourite.
Talking of domination of a sport, Team Sky Sports, or Team Sky, I should say, have been dominant in the world of cycling for several years now. They concluded that again this year with the dominant victory of Geraint Thomas, who has this week been announced as the name that will be emblazoned on the National Velodrome of Wales. It'll now be known as the Geraint Thomas National Velodrome of Wales in honour of his extraordinary victory. Also news this week that Tour de France winners Geraint Thomas and his teammate Chris Froome will both lead Team Sky at next month's Tour of Britain as well. Meanwhile, twin brothers Adam and Simon Yates will race together at the Vuelta a España for Australian team Mitchelton Scott. Talking of cycling, the UAE has gone from strength to strength in recent years with their expansion to the world of cycling through Team UAE Cycling, Team Emirates, UAE Emirates Cycling, which had a very successful season season, and more so than in the Tour of France. That has concluded in UAE Cycling Open, its first ever academy here in the region. That was announced earlier on this week, and it's hoped that that will help to capitalise on the grassroots development of cycling here in the region and to unearth the stars of the future.
This summer we partnered with UAE Team Emirates to launch their Youth Academy. It's been an amazing initiative and we've had a fantastic response from both the kids and their parents. Hundreds of budding young cyclists have been involved and we've loved watching them get fit and have fun.
I was really trying to go as fast as I can. It feels really good to see and be part of like a big community.
Cycling is very good for your fitness. You can train with a professional person and it makes you happy being with friends.
The kids have learned about sprinting, climbing and riding tempo, as well as pushing themselves to really test their legs and see how much strength they have. We've run 21 sessions over 3 weeks and each one was inspired by an individual stage of the Tour de France. We've improved their technique, their strength and their fitness, as well as boosting their confidence.
One day I'd love to be a professional cyclist riding for UAE Team Emirates.
Congratulations to UAE Team Emirates. Congratulations to UAE Cycling. Well done to them for establishing their first academy here in the region and hearing from some of the youngsters who harbour ambitions for the sport in years to come. And I mean, it's a growth sport here, without a doubt, isn't it?
If you can put me on it, thank you. Yeah. Tommy, tell you what, he's forgotten a couple of things on his vacation.
It's
ultimately one of the quickest growing sports in Dubai or in the UAE at the moment, I think, which is absolutely fantastic. And you know, you got to compliment the foundations and so forth in the UAE. More cycling tracks opening, and really a lot of growth for the sport. So it is fantastic, and it's good to see that everybody getting behind the sport of cycling, because it is a great sport.
Sean, I know that you obviously focus on football as your sort of your specialised area expertise as well. But have you seen more sort of cross sports coming in as well, looking to sort of take up other sports to help and get the most out of certain athletes? I mean, is cycling part of the training program for a footballer these days?
Well, it is. I mean, like, you know, we had some of the Bournemouth lads over in the summer, and they would cycle, you know, from the sports complex at NAS down to the you know, the new Maidan One project. We have the whole cycle path that's all connected
Of course, yeah.
And they do a lot of teams when they come over. The Bournemouth lads would cycle daily. When they finish the training session, they go and have a bit of a cycle. You can probably get about 30-40 kilometres if you do the whole cycle. And then some of the teams that come over, Hamburg and Stockholm, when they've been, they stay at the Maidan Hotel and we give them bikes and they cycle to and from the complex every
brilliant.
Day.
Okay.
So they do that as part of their warm-up and get a bit of extra fitness. It's just something different rather than sitting on a bus. You know, they get to cycle up on the cycle tracks. They do, you know, we have lads playing paddle, we have lads playing volleyball when they come and stuff. It's just to mix it up and keep it interesting, because I think especially players that come, you know, they're coming back from like long-term injury and stuff, it can be a bit boring, the sort of exercise that they have to do. So to do different sports and do something a little bit different just makes it a bit more fun for them.
Something I noticed with the cricket, because you know, obviously when I was playing my cricket, it was years and years ago, and therefore there wasn't that much of it was very sort of focused on certain stretches and things like that. You look at the boys now, always in the outfield, it's either with a football, a bit of a soccer kick around.
Yeah, you see them
playing
football quite a lot, don't you?
They love their football, and they love their a bit of the Aussie throwing as well. The Aussie rules ball comes out as well. So I suppose it sort of takes your mind away from your specialised subject, your specialised sport as well.
Well, like you say, it just helps probably relax, because obviously, like with the cricket there, they probably have a hard, you know, not hard, but it's quite intense building up to the game that's coming, and it's just something to break the natural or the normal cycle and just let them help them relax and prepare for the game a little bit, I suppose.
We're talking all things sport this afternoon here on The Grill. Thanks very much indeed for your text messages. Keep them coming in, 4001. Thanks to Dion, who's texted in saying, are there any French players in consideration for the Ryder Cup? It's going to be a tough one for Thomas Bjorn, isn't it? Because you'd love to have a French player in there, given it's at Le Golf National. The problem is, there's just no one putting their hand up at the moment, is there?
No, I have to agree with that, Tom. I guess Thomas Levy must really, would just off the top of my head, would be the one that you could think of, but I just don't think he's quite up to the grade yet. So yeah, it will be rather disappointing from a European perspective that there won't be any homegrown talent in that Ryder Cup team. But yeah, as of now, just not enough French players with enough points.
I want to reflect on a couple of the other big football stories of the weekend as well. We're focusing on the games that are taking place today. No goals to report on from the Premier League or, of course, from the Scottish Cup as yet. But we did have a game in the Championship last night. There is a full list of schedule, a full schedule of fixtures from 6 o'clock this evening in the Championship. Birmingham took on Swansea last night in another of these Friday evening games to kick off the action of a weekend. Birmingham against Swansea, two teams who've been up there at the topest, top table of British football, now looking to get back up there. Finished 0-0. What did we learn from that game, Sean O'Shea?
Well, I think that the biggest thing there is that Swansea have started very, very well. I think when they went down, there was a little bit of a worry that they might, you know, they might completely capitulate and even maybe go down again, because they seemed to sort of fall to pieces last year in the Premier League. But they've started very well. They started strongly. They won the first two games. And then to go away at Birmingham, you know, Birmingham, not a bad side, you know, to go away and get a draw is a good start for Swansea, really, I think.
There was a result from the French Ligue 1 which got underway as well this weekend. Reims taking on Lyon yesterday. Reims beating Lyon by 1-0. A couple of games from the German DFB Cup, and two games from the Spanish La Liga. First weekend of action for them. Girona take on Real Valladolid, 0-0 in that one. I suppose the biggest surprise from last night was Levante. They travelled to Real Betis yesterday. Betis obviously still on pre-season at the moment, because they lost 3-0 at home to Levante in on the opening day of La Liga, so a bit of work for them to be done, which turns our attention to Spanish action today. I mean, a lot of focus on a certain Cristiano Ronaldo playing not in Spain but over in Italy later on this weekend. But let's just start with those three games in Spanish La Liga for this afternoon. Celta Vigo taking on Espanyol at 8:15 this evening. 10:15 you see Villarreal against Real Sociedad, and then Barcelona in action a little later on against Alaves. That one is at 12:15 at local time here in the UAE. I mean, traditionally, is Spanish La Liga, especially, you know, given the fact that we're in a World Cup year, is this going to be like a number of other leagues? It's going to take a little while for a number of the big guns to get back up to speed?
I don't know. It's possible. I think, you know, my feeling about the Spanish League, you know, you talk about the Premier League, and we were saying at the top of the show there that, you know, the first place can lose to 20th, but you know, it's very rare you get surprise results in the in the Spanish League. So even if, you know, your Barcelonas and your Real Madrids are slow starters, I think they'll still have enough about them to get positive results, you know, until they get going. Obviously, there are a lot of players at the World Cup. But as we see in the Premier League last week, these lads, they're fit and they're fresh. You know, they had a couple of weeks off and they're back into training. They're well looked after. And I think it's not as big a problem as people perceive it to be, you know, this getting back into the swing of things with the season. You know, lads that want to play football are happy to go back in and play as well. So.
La Liga is back in action. It's without a certain Cristiano Ronaldo. We'll talk more about him and his first game proper for Juventus a little later on. But before that, let's have a look ahead to the action from La Liga this weekend. A preview from our colleagues over the road on this particular one, with some big games and some questions to be answered.
New La Liga season. Craig Burley with a nice easy one to begin with. Barcelona against Alaves.
If you say so, I'm going to go for Barcelona. Made some good signings and the little man's fit, but I don't like the way you've just written off Alaves there.
How do you know I've written them off?
Is it on social media that would be called disrespectful or worse?
Top of Segunda last year, very good, decent at home. That's a tough one for Sevilla away from home to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the first game of the season away from home is always tough no matter where you go, but I'm going to go for Sevilla. It'll be a tough season coming up from the second.
Yeah. Year. But I think they'll get a draw in the opener.
Oh,
now,
going for a draw, yeah.
Real Madrid against Getafe.
Now, I'm going to, you know, it's got to be home, but this is going to be so much pressure for the next few weeks for Lopetegui. You
know,
after the Spanish debacle, after the Super Cup, post Zidane, post Ronaldo, it's going to be a great watch to see how they cope. I think they'll cope all right at the weekend, though.
Yeah. Monday, what a game. Valencia against Atleti, who looked really good against Real Madrid.
They did, and I think just watching them and seeing the players that they've brought in and the players that they've kept, and how hungry Diego Costa is, and particularly in Griezmann still there, Koke, Saal, Godin, Oblak, and then the Thomas Lemar's come in. I just think it's great for Serie A. I'm going to go for a win here, but it's a tough game at the Mestalla, a really tough game to start. It'd be a great game, but having watched them in the Super Cup, I'm just so impressed with them. What rate, guile, quality, I think they're going to really push Barca and Real Madrid all the way, and if they slip up, Atleti could win the league. So I think this will be a tough game for them, but having seen the quality they've got this summer in the Super Cup, I'm going for a win.
I think it'll be a draw. I just wonder now, if you offered a point to Simeone, would he take it?
No.
I'm not sure he would.
You seen him jumping about in the sidelines? He would not take a point.
So we agree on a couple and disagree on the other two. The opening weekend of La Liga.
It's worrying.
Full preview.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, let's get some updates for you on the football, live football that is. Premier League early kickoff. It is Cardiff against Newcastle. We've also got Scottish League Cup action for you. 58 minutes in. Partick Thistle taking on Celtic up there in Scotland. Let's get the latest from Sean O'Shea.
Yes, score is still 1-0, the Celtic-Partick Thistle game. And then Cardiff-Newcastle is still 0-0. And Cardiff yet to record a shot on target. Newcastle have had four shots on target. But saying that, still a fairly even game. But Newcastle probably just edging it a little bit. But let's see.
Let's go to the cricket, shall we? Because they're back out after a hearty lunch. India are 86 for 3. You've got Rahane there not out on 2. And Kohli not out there on 2 at the on 6 at the moment. We'll keep an eye on those ones for you. Let's just stick with the cricket if we can, because cricket-wise, it's been an eventful week. We've spoken about Ben Stokes already this week because of the fact that he has very much been in the news headlines, but that's not the only news from the world of cricket. In fact, there was sad news through earlier on this week as we heard that former India captain Ajit Vadekar died at the age of 77. Now, he was a man who will be remembered fondly, not just by Indian cricket fans, but cricket fans the world over. And also a man who had a significant impact on the game and the way it was played in India and across the globe.
A very respected figure. I mean, he had a particular sort of speech pattern that a lot of people tended to copy just for fun. But I mean, I don't mean to take the poignancy of the moment away. I mean, he did so much for India at a time when India needed a leg up in international cricket. Of course, he had the support of young Gavaskar at that point of time. Dilip Sardesai did so well in the West Indies when they came away with the win, and then, of course, the big win in England, which was ground-changing for Indian cricket. And then when England came to India thereafter, of course, India won as well. So those three series where Vadekar was in charge were game-changing for India, without question, the kind of confidence that built up. And he personally perhaps may not have gotten too many runs, but I think there's a lot to be said about man management again, and the way he handled the players overseas particularly and in India. A true statesman, remained involved with the game to an extent as a selector. Of course, he was also a senior functionary of a bank, so he did have other things to occupy his mind. You know, sometimes when people don't get enough from the game, and at that stage you can imagine there wasn't really anything in terms of remuneration from the game, then it could have led to a little bit of frustration as it did for others. But he was well employed and remained a thorough gentleman all the way through. I enjoyed all my times with him. It's a shame. I think he went a little too early, didn't he?
He will be missed by Indian cricket fans and cricket fans the world over. We've also had local news this week, the T20X to come to the UAE before the end of the year, December this year. If you want to get more details on that one, the brains and the vision, the CEOs behind T20X were in studio with Chris McCarty and Mark Archer, so you can catch the podcast from Sport Tonight from earlier this week. They were also in the studio with Richard Dean and Brandy Scott on the Business Breakfast. So hitting it up on two fronts, both business and sport. Ben Stokes is playing for England against India as we speak at the moment. He has been the subject of a lot of conversations over the last few days. We heard from the current England Test captain, Joe Root, a little earlier on today. We're now going to hear from a former England Test captain, Michael Vaughan. Does he believe that Ben Stokes should be playing for England this soon after the not guilty verdict?
I can't get my head around the fact why he wouldn't want to go and take a little bit of time off. You know, even if England wanted him, you know, he'd just gone through 8 days in Crown Court. I'd have thought that his head could be in a different place for wanting to play international cricket. But he's a different specimen to most. You know, and he will play Saturday. He'll be back. The one thing that I don't think he deserves, and I'm sure, knowing the England cricket fans as I do, they will give him a reception. I don't think he deserves that. He's certainly not a hero, as some have portrayed him to be. He has brought the game into disrepute, but I do think the punishment and the fact that he missed the whole winter in Australia is enough, and now he's got the not guilty charge, I think he should be able to play cricket. In terms of cricket, it's a great position for England to be in if you've got Stokes available, in terms of a cricketer, because he's outstanding. Yeah. They will make way for somebody. I don't think it should be Pope. You know, he got that number four position, you could look at Joss Butler. You know, two test matches against India, not really done a great deal. You could go Rashid. You know, if the pitch is going to be the same as we've seen at Edgbaston at Lords, and it's going to swing around, do you need a spinner? So I do think there's one or two that will be looking over the shoulder this week, but one thing's for sure, in terms of a cricketing sense, Joe Root, the captain, will be delighted to have the all-round expertise of Ben Stokes back available.
That was Michael Vaughan giving his thoughts on Ben Stokes. He thinks he should be taking time out from the game. Seems to have started all right. There is leaking a few runs from his early overs. Chris Wokes is the man who's picking up the wickets. He's taken the first three wickets for England against India. Let's get down to Cardiff now, because there's been a bit of drama there in the last few minutes. Sean, what's happened?
We haven't had a goal, but we've had a red card. Yeah, Isaac Hayden for Newcastle has been sent off. And I think it's a little bit harsh, to be honest. It was from behind. His studs were his, but there was no real intent to go and try and hurt the player. But the referee's blown and give him a straight red card. So Newcastle down to 10 men, and what an opportunity. Now, lasted about 23 minutes of normal time to play, so great opportunity for Cardiff to try and kick on now and try and sneak a goal.
One question we've been asking a number of you throughout the show is to send us your suggestions for sports stars that have moved into something alternative post-retirement from the world of sport. If you've got any suggestions, then please do exactly that one. A couple of people have been texting in Magic Johnson. Does that count as well? I suppose he switched sports for a certain degree, but they're also merchandising as well in a big way.
Yeah, but he's the big boss of the LA Lakers at the moment, so that can count for him. Another text in here, Sebastian Coe.
Yeah. That of makes makes a, it makes a, makes a, makes for a lot of sense there. What about Garry Kasparov? I mean, chess, do we count that as a sport because somebody sent that one in?
Yeah, you got to count that as a sport, Tom. Come on.
He turned into a social activist. If you've got any other suggestions, then why not send them to us on 4001 and we will try and read out as many as we can.
Tom, I've got one here for you. Tony O'Reilly, former British and Irish Lion, Irish international. Of course, he was the head of the Independent Newspapers and Media Corp and then went on to be the chairman of HJ Heinz Company, rumoured to be the first billionaire in Ireland.
There we go. Those are the suggestions. Have you got any other suggestions for sports stars who hung up their boots or hung up their sticks and then turned their attention to something complete? Who was the... It was David... Was it David... I'll get you the name, but there was certainly a English cricketer who played cricket for England. Was it David Owen or David Shepherd? One of the two, who then went on to become a very high-ranking bishop in the church in England. I can't remember who it was, but I will get the name for you on that one. So are there other alternatives out there? If you could share yours with us, that would be appreciated. The reason we're asking this is because of Imran Khan, of course. I grew up watching Imran Khan, just loved it, loved the way he played his cricket. A man who seemed to have no fear whatsoever, led Pakistan to World Cup glory in the shorter version of the game. Do you always remember him, don't you? Because the shirt was unbuttoned, yeah. It was billowing as well. He had those great fights, those great sort of fracas on the pit field with so many people, just played the game hard.
Absolutely fantastic. And I mean, that bowling combination with him and Waka Yunus at the time, one left, one right. And of course, I remember the 1992 World Cup down in Australia where South Africa unfortunately would get 22 runs of one ball through the Duckworth Lewis system. Still hate the system. But he was absolutely sensational. And you know how he used to carry that Pakistani team with him. Fantastic, fantastic to watch in his day.
Imran Khan has been named the Prime Minister over in Pakistan. You'd think that he was a man who had no fears, no qualms, no misgivings, no superstitions. Well, you'd be wrong. And listen carefully, because it all started not a million miles from here. We'll be back with the third hour straight after Khan's superstition.
I'm not superstitious, except once there's this friend of mine in Sharjah. We were having dinner at her house and she knew nothing about cricket. And she suddenly told me that she had a feeling, and of course it was a match against the match in Sharjah, which is Pakistan v India. And she had predicted a couple of times, she knew nothing about cricket, and she said Pakistan would win and we won, and once she said we'd lose and we lost. And suddenly before this match she said that India would win. And you know, I mean, I'm not superstitious at all, I don't believe in this. And then as India went off to a great start with Sunil and Sirikant, and they were in trouble early on, they played and missed, and then they just got away. And suddenly it struck me that maybe she's right. And it was the only time I actually thought, you know, we weren't going to win the match because this woman had, she just knew it. And it's the only time it's happened. And I'm fortunately, we won the match, and that was the match Javed won with a six. And since then, I've refused ever to listen to anyone before a match because it actually changed my attitude.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.